and how God turned my life around. I shared with you last week about my hitchhiking story to Colorado, being in the mountains, and I didn't share all the details. I left some of the gory parts out. But I wasn't living a very good life, let's just say. I wasn't living a very righteous life at the time. And shortly after Colorado, I got a little bored with the mountains, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go to Texas. So I walked out to the highway, and I stuck out my thumb, and I headed down the road to Houston. And Joe, this is doing really terrible things up here. I'm sure you know it, but some effects or something. Thank you very much. And I head down to Texas, and I stayed down there for about 6 weeks working on the oil fields. And after that, I thought, you know, I'm kind of bored down here too. So I'll go back home briefly, say hello to the family, and I'm going to go to California. Everyone said, go west, young man. My father had gone west. My uncles had gone west. And I thought, you know, I should go west. California's the place for me. So I moved out to San Francisco. I had a cousin. She was my favorite cousin because she was the cutest cousin. She was not, like, literally my cousin because my uncle had married her mother after they were already born. So she was, you know, like his stepdaughter. And so she was kind of like my step-cousin. I always had a crush on her, and she had this little boy. So I thought, well, I'll go out and live with her for a while, and she can show me around out there. Maybe I'll meet some neat women. About the third day I was out there, I was helping her do the dishes, and one of the glasses was cracked, but I didn't know it was cracked. And I was, you know, doing the wash rag thing inside, and boom, it popped and slit my knuckle open, and blood goes everywhere, and I'm about passing out. She calls the ambulance, and I remember blacking out as I walked down the steps, and I woke up later. My hand's all swollen because it took them 2 hours to get to me in the emergency room in San Francisco. And so then I won't tell you all the gory things they had to do. Needless to say, I had 18 stitches in my hand, and I couldn't use my right hand for a long time. I couldn't get a job. I would sit in the apartment and stare at the walls and wonder what's going on in my life. And finally, she decided she wanted her old boyfriend back. I wasn't her boyfriend. I was just, you know, someone that supposedly helped share the rent. It just did it to me again, Joe. Whatever's going on, please help me out. The next thing I know, she's got me living with Dusty and Mindy. Their names were, as they indicated, they were hookers. They worked in the California massage parlor where my cousin worked. She told me it was a health club. I found out, of course, otherwise. And so it's me, these two hookers, but it wasn't what you think. My life got even more empty. And finally, I thought to myself, you know what? I'm tired of living like this. I'm tired of hitchhiking. I need to go back, get myself a car next time I come out here, come out in style. So her father, who's my uncle, had this really cool sports car, she said, and he wanted to sell it. So I left just enough money in my account to get back to Iowa. So I get back to Iowa in a snowstorm. I took a bus home from the airport. I arranged a loan at the bank for about $800 and just to make sure I had it if I wanted to buy the car. And I went down to see this car. And it was love at first sight. It was a 1968 Dodson Roadster 1600. Now, that may not seem like a big deal to you. This was 1975. The car was only 7 years old and it looked like an MG Midget or a Triumph. Those are very cool cars. It sat very low to the ground. I could take corners at 60 miles an hour. It was light blue, which at the time was my favorite color. Had a black little convertible top. And man, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I had to have that car. So my uncle said, oh, I'll give you a good deal on it, Mark. Sell it to you for $800. Man, this was awesome. I had the car of my dreams. The thing driving home, I'm just zipping down the road. Boom, boom. It would just turn. It was like a go-kart. Have you ever ridden in a go-kart? You know how you just turn, you never roll over. You just turn on a dime. That's what it was like, except on the highway. Some of you ride motorcycles know the thrill I'm talking about. I'm not a motorcycle guy myself. I'm thinking to myself, you know, now I got the car of my dreams. Now I need the woman of my dreams. Got the car, now I need a girl. A few days later, I get a call from a friend. He says, Mark, we used to go hear bands play. We were really into bands. And in the 70s, you could go to just about any bar, and there was live bands playing all the time. Kind of like the Allman Brother breed. That was my kind of band. So he invited me to go, and I thought, yeah, you know, I'm not doing anything else tonight. And I'd just gotten back from town, and I had, you know, all my hitchhiking stories to tell, so that, well, I could make conversation. So I got to the bar, and I walk in, and I've got my bell bottoms on. I got my platform shoes. And I got my 1930s Depression jacket hung down to here, big fur collar, massive fur collar. And all I could say was I was just cool. You know, I mean, just really cool. So I go walking into the bar and I see my friends and I saunter over in my big old platform shoes. I mean, they were, my daughter's wearing some like what I used to wear tonight. They were kind of that tan camel color, about this high. The fronts were about that high and they zipped up the side. And I go over and I sit down by my friends and we start talking and we're starting to exchange stories, you know, because now we've been out of high school for a while, and man, we know lots about life. And the next thing I know, out of the blue, this woman comes up, real attractive woman. This kind of stuff does not happen to me. She walks up, she says, excuse me, you're Mark Darling, aren't you? I said, yeah, yes, I am. I've never seen this woman before in my life. I had no idea how she knew my name. She said, well, you know, you don't know me, and you probably think this is strange, but I was at one of your concerts about a year ago, and man, you are amazing. I never heard anybody sing like that. Needless to say, I was like a calf led to slaughter. The ring was in my nose. Lead me wherever you want me to go. The flattery worked. She was attractive, and I was hooked. She sat down, we began to talk, and I asked her if she'd come with a friend, so I said, hey, you mind if I give you a ride home tonight? She said, no, that'd be great with me. So I gave her a ride home that night, and she lived about 20 miles from where I lived. And so I drove her home, and, well, you know, we pull up to the house, and we're sitting there talking, and next thing I know, she leans over and kisses me. I'm thinking, man, this is awesome, an aggressive woman. That's what I'm thinking at the time. It stopped there, and she said goodnight, and thanks for the ride, and oh, that's what the kiss was for, and she, so I did, you know, I'm out of high school now, you get your confidence, once you're out of high school, it's amazing what it can do for your confidence. So I was real bold, and I said, well, you know, you mind if I see you again sometime? No, I'd love that. Well, can I get your phone number? Yeah, here it is. She had it already written out. I don't know, I have that effect on women. You know, it was an amazing time in my life. So, all of a sudden, this incredible relationship, you know, just seems to unfold right before my eyes. I got this great car, and I got this seemingly great woman in my life. All of a sudden, some really weird things started happening. Like, just weird. It started with my car. One day I'm driving home from work, and I noticed I was having a lot of trouble seeing. Thinking, man, a lot. You know how fog can move in all of a sudden, just there's no fog, and then the next thing you know, there's fog. And man, I can hardly see the road. So I rolled down the window, and there's no fog. It's my car. It's full of smoke. All around me is smoke. Kind of the odorless kind, you know? And I'm thinking, what in the world is going on? And so I wasn't too far from home, so I kept driving home. And I got home, I popped the hood, and man, there's smoke everywhere. And there's antifreeze all over the inside of the hood. And, you know, it's just, this is horrendous. Radiator cap's gone. And I'm thinking, how does a radiator cap disappear off a car? Well, you know, it never dawned on me that in 1968... Dodson Roadster might be a little hard to find parts for. Of course, I wasn't thinking logically at the time. I called all over the state for the next 2 weeks. No one had a radiator cap for a 1968 Datsun Roadster. Not a junkyard, not a dealer. Hardly anybody sold Datsuns. They're now Nissans today. They used to be Datsun. So my brothers and I, my father's kind of an inventor. We're out carving corks. I kid you not. We're carving wooden corks, rubber corks. We're sticking big screws down in the cork to expand the cork. It would run for a while, bam, and it would blow the cork. And I'm not too happy. I'm not the most patient guy in the world. In those days, I was not patient at all. I kicked the car, beat the car, swear at the car, stupid car. Because every time the car wouldn't work, I couldn't see the girl that I, was in love with. So Dad spent all day working on the car just so I could get it ready to go see her. Finally, we find some way to rig this radiator cap by getting one that doesn't fit and then wiring the thing down all around the thing, and it just stuck there. Little did I know, you see, that in the meantime I had warped the heads because the engine had overheated, but that's another story for another time. So anyway, I go to pick her up for this big date. We're going to this big concert. Now she lives in Des Moines, the big city, the capital city. Right across from Betts Auditorium, where all the concerts happen. So we go to see The Who in concert. The night Roger Daltrey throws a conniption fit, breaks speakers, slams his mics into the ground because nothing works. So my concert night didn't go very well. So I drop her off at home that night, and needless to say, our relationship was anything but pure. It was very immoral. So I'm driving home, it's about 2 in the morning. I got to be to work at 6, so I get home in about an hour, get a couple hours sleep, be raring to go. But when you're living that kind of life, you're having all that kind of sex, you're thinking to yourself, man, life is good. It's about 2 in the morning, and I'm driving on the freeway, and the next thing I know, but I didn't know, is that I fell asleep. And the next thing I hear is rumble, rumble, and I wake up, and I'm driving on the grassy area of the middle of 35W. I'm thinking to myself, all of a sudden I'm thinking, how in the did I get down in this ditch? Could have sideswiped a car, could have hit a culvert, could have hit a bridge, could have been going on the other side of the road, slamming into somebody. I'm really freaked out, and I look and I pop the car back up on the highway, and I'm rolling down the window and I'm cranking the radio. I mean, I have got to stay awake. All I know is 3 or 4 more times it happened, and I didn't quite remember the trip home, but when I got home, I was shaking. You see, that was the third time in 3 weeks that I almost was killed. The first time was driving my little fancy car to where I worked. And I had to go through the school district to my job. And as I was going through the school district, slowing down, the accelerator accelerated and stuck at 60 miles an hour. It stuck. I put my foot behind it, pulled up on it. It would not unstick. The engine's revving, and I'm thinking really fast, what do I do? What do I do? Pushing the clutch, put it in neutral, turn it off. But it wouldn't, I put it in neutral, but it wouldn't go off because the engine was revving. So I bump, 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 into the parking lot, and the car dies. And my heart's just pounding. I'm thinking, what in the heck is going on? I get out of the car, and I go into the factory where I worked. I was a machinist. And my job to come every morning and open up the shop. And I turn on the heat, and I go to walk to go to the bathroom, and I hear this funny sound. I look out the window in the shop. There's blue flames shooting out of the heater. I dive over the railing outside, cover my head, waiting for an explosion. The propane tank had frozen open, and the room was filling with propane. Fortunately, of course, it had not all leaked in, or I would have been immediately incinerated. I start my car. I drive home that night, and, it didn't stick. I couldn't figure it out. Took it to the shop. The guy worked on it, called the propane company. They worked on the propane tank. Come to work the next day, the same identical two things happen. The accelerator sticks again. The brand new gas valve on the propane tank freezes open. I'm diving over the railing again, laying on the ground, and I am seriously wondering who's trying to kill me. few nights later, I'm driving home with this gal from this concert, another concert we went to. I think it was the Doobie Brothers. I don't remember. They all run together. And I got my platform boots on and my depression coat, and it's about 10 below zero this night. And this car got sort of warm, but you just had to know the cars back in the 60s. They didn't warm up very well. So I'm driving down the road and taking some backcountry roads I know that are shortcuts to get us home. And I have to take this left turn, and you can take them pretty fast, but you know, you got to clutch a little and go to shift. So as I clutch and let up off the gas, the car dies, the idle. You know, it just doesn't idle, it just dies. So I take the left turn, and of course we're headed downhill and then up a slight incline. Wouldn't you know? I'm mad. I'm so mad. It's freezing out. I've got these slippery boots on. I got no winter gear with me. So I'm thinking, I got to get out of this car and I got to push the car to get it to start. So I said, you know how to drive a stick? I've never driven a stick, Mark. I don't know how to drive a stick. You've got to be kidding. You do not know how to drive a stick? I'm not going up to a farmhouse at 2 a.m. Okay, so you got to learn how to drive this car now. Okay, now I'm going to put in second gear. Here's the deal, okay? You get in here. Put in the clutch. It's in second gear, okay? The ignition, see, it's on. Don't mess with it. Don't touch the gas pedal. Now, I'm going to get behind. I'm going to huff and I'm going to puff and roll the window down. And when I say, pop the clutch, let the clutch out, it'll go kunk, kunk, kunk. Then give it a little gas. Then push in the clutch. Give it gas. Brake. Give it gas. Keep the clutch in so that it stays running. That's what you had to do. She goes, oh, I think she was scared to say she couldn't do it. I said, oh, okay, Mark, I think I have it. I said, okay. I said, now you got to get this because I got to push this up a hill and it's going to half kill me. So I'm pushing. I'm out. It's 2 a.m. and I'm thinking, you know, what heck am I doing out here? Pushing and I'm pushing and pushing. My little body's going, my legs. Push. All of a sudden I go, pop the clutch. Pop. Boom. Boom. She takes off down the highway. Boom. She does not know how to stop the car and keep it running. And I'm running down. Push in the clutch. Brake. Put on the gas. Don't let it die. And I must have ran 1.5 miles before I finally caught up to the car. She had it stopped. She figured it out. I get in the car. I think I'm going to die. It's like 10 below. I'm sweating profusely. And I'm thinking, oh man, this piece of junk car. Why did I follow my feelings? Why didn't I think? Why didn't I use a little more logic? No, had to have my way. Had to do what my emotions told me to do. Just starting to think this. It was a couple weeks later that I woke up in the grass. And that was enough, after 3 times, to get my attention. You see, what was really going on in my life at the time was that I had made a decision. Just being very honest with you this evening. I made a decision to leave God out of my life, deliberately. Deliberately. And I began to realize that that particular night, that both these decisions, the car and the girl, were having a very negative impact on my life, all because I had followed my feelings, my passions, and my emotions. Instead of following God and submitting to God's plan for my life, I was following Mark's plan for my life. And guess what? It doesn't go very well when you do that. And quite frankly, 15 years of pastoring, I could share with you a collection of thousands of stories of other people who did what I did but found out too late what a foolish decision it was to follow their feelings, their passions, and their emotions and to ignore God. And that night, I made a conscious decision in my life that I'm putting God first. I cannot live this way anymore. It's empty. It's meaningless. I knew I was doing things that I shouldn't be doing. And that night and the morning after, the very next morning, when I completed that decision, I got up that morning and I drove out and I had a long talk with God. It was that night that I fully, completely, 100% yielded everything in my life to God. Every future decision, my body, my mouth, my life, my mind, my passions, everything was God's. It was all God's call to make. It was no longer mine. It was the most important decision that I ever made in my life. And that decision, that night, changed my life. A few days later, I was reading in my Bible. I had not read my Bible since I was 15. Going to church, and I just follow along when the pastor would read. But I wasn't an avid Bible reader. I didn't know the Bible. So I did what a lot of people do. I just kind of opened my Bible and leafed through a few pages. And there was this book called Job or something. And I found out later it was Job. For whatever reason, I was in chapter 22, verse 21 and 22. And here's what it said. Yield now and be at peace with him. Thereby good will come to you. Please receive instruction from his mouth and establish his words in your heart. God could not have spoken to me any clearer as if he had been right in front of me that day. I had no question, and I've had no question in 27, that was almost 27 years ago, that I had an encounter with God in my life. That God was behind the scenes orchestrating things in my life. And God had me right where he wanted me, in a place where he could change my life and he could bless my life and he could do something significant with my life. There were a few conditions. The first was, Mark, I want you to yield. Yield now. I was not used to yielding. I'll be the first one to acknowledge that to you. I'm not a yielder. Submission is not something I do naturally. And that night, and that following morning, I yielded everything to God, including who I would marry. Now, I'm going to explain that in a moment, what I mean, what it meant to me. It may mean something a little different to you, but I want to share with you what it meant to me. The next thing I held on to was that peace would come to my life. There was no peace in my life. My life was full of inner turmoil. Every time I messed around with this girl, when I left, I did not feel satisfied. My conscience bothered me, and I didn't like it, and I couldn't silence it. And I tried. I tried to suppress it. I tried to push it down. I tried to tell myself, religion is the opiate of the people. God doesn't exist. And I think through all my grand funk songs, all my Led Zeppelin songs, and I think, those guys are having a good life. Of course, now, in those days, they didn't have that special VH1 show, Where Are They Now? Now we know, as Paul Harvey said, the rest of the story. But at the time, it looked like, you know, it was a great time. But inside, I wasn't having a great time. I knew, this is bothering me. My life is bothering me. I'm 20 years old. And my life is meaningless. It's pointless. And this is empty. And this thing was serious because we were talking about getting married. You know, this was not like, you know, let's talk about getting married. The next thing that it said here was good would come to me. And I realized I had to make a conscious decision to believe God would keep his word. Now, you got to understand, I didn't know God. I mean, I never met God face to face. I had heard about God as a little child. I had embraced Christ when I was about 9. That's about all I knew. But for whatever reason, looking back on the events of my life, I knew God is talking to me. Let me tell you something. God is a little bit like love. You know when it's the right one, and I'll tell you how in just a moment. You also know when it's God talking to you. You know it's God. You can't shut off the voice. And it's there. You ever walked away from one of these messages? This happened to me many times. You walk away, but when you're sitting there, you feel a little uncomfortable. It's like, hey, could you shut up? I don't like him. You find reasons not to like me. Now, I know there are some. Maybe sometimes I make it easy on you. But you also know there are times it ain't me at all. It ain't Greg at all. It's God. It's God talking to you. rattling around in your brain and you don't like it. And that's where I was at. But I finally got to the point I said, no, I can't do this anymore, God. You know why? Because you're going to kill me. Because it's going to cost me my life. The biggest fool in the world is the person who decides, even if it costs me my life, I'm going to do things my own way. And I knew that night, that's really the kind of person I had become. I was going to do it my way, even if it killed me. And that night I said, no. No, God, I'm going to submit to you tonight. And then he says, please receive instruction from his mouth and establish his word in your heart. And I knew what that meant. No one had to tell me. I had nobody mentoring me. I had nobody that walked along, came along and said, Mark, let me disciple you. God was there, and I knew what he meant. Open my book, stick your nose in it, Mark, and find out what I have to say and do it. I knew that's my interpretation. So I did. Two nights later, I knew in my heart, this young lady had to go out of my life and dating had to go out of my life. Dating for me was like alcohol to an alcoholic. You may think one drink isn't too bad. You may think one date isn't too bad. I knew for me, I'd end up in bed. I knew that. I'm not too proud to admit that. A lot of us are way too proud to admit it. I knew where it would lead me. I could not deal at this time in my life with the opposite sex. What's more, I needed God. I needed God. You see, I was in the business all these years of trying to find my mate. And that night, that next day, and through that next week, I told God, you know what, God? You're the great mate arranger. You're the great matchmaker. You arrange my marriage. You arrange the woman you want me to meet. And when it's time, just knock me on the head, point her out, tell me what to do. Now, I know that sounds really naive. You just have to trust me. I don't mean anything weird by this. It was just truly, genuinely, sincerely from my heart. I just said, God, I cannot do this. I cannot handle this area of my life. In fact, I can't handle any area of my life. I'm going to absorb your word. I began to absorb the word of God. I went to this young lady two nights later, and she thought I was coming to propose. There was this big party we were going to. It was a special date that had been planned. And when I got there, I didn't mean to hurt her feelings or anything. I just said, would you mind if we stay and talk? There's really some important things we need to talk about. And I could tell she kind of smiled and was like, he's going to propose. And I'm thinking, oh, I do not want to hurt this young lady. So I said to her, I explained a little bit of what had been going on because I had not told her any of this. And you'll know why in just a moment. Well, the first thing I want to do, after I told her a few of the events that were happening, how I almost got killed, I said, first thing I want to do is apologize to you. She looked at me, for what? I said, because I've used you. Because I know better than sleeping with you. And I want to apologize to you. I don't know if you can forgive me, but I'm asking you to forgive me. Secondly, I want to let you know that this next statement has nothing to do with you. You're a very attractive woman. I think you're a fine lady. It's just I'm not the guy for you. And after tonight, you'll never see me again. I won't be down here ever again. And then I began to explain to her my spirituality, how I had come to know Christ and that I had been running from God for a long time and the running had to stop. And I urged her, give your life to Christ. It's your business, but I urge you to follow Christ because I know you well enough to know you don't have any peace either. But I want you to know, I don't come with the deal. Women have been a God in my life. And there's only room for one God in my life. And he now sits on the most precious place of my soul. Well, she understood, but she wasn't happy about it. And she said, I appreciate you being honest with me. There's the door. See you later. So I left. A few days later, I came across a verse in Romans that says, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not along with him freely give us everything else that we need? And I thought to myself, my gosh, God gave Adam Eve. I guess if God loves me enough to give me His Son, if I say that I'm going to believe God for eternity, I say I'm a Christian now, I have eternal life, then wouldn't it be quite hypocritical for me to say, but you know, the woman department, Lord, that's me. I'm taking that over. Because it's God's gift to give. It's not my right to take. No one told me that. God spoke that to me 1 week into my decision. So I laid that to rest and I began to follow God. Well, let me tell you a little story, something very interesting. Sometimes you wonder, is God really working supernaturally in your life? I lived in a town at the time, 10,000 people. You would not have found another Datsun 1600 Roadster probably in the entire state of Iowa. They were very rare. They weren't that good of a car, and they didn't sell that many of them. During the middle of all of this turmoil that's going on, before I decide to follow Christ, I'm driving down the road, Main Street. One Main Street, one theater, one pizza lounge, a couple cool clothing stores. That's it. Main Street. And I'm driving down, and it's late. I had never seen one in all my time driving to Des Moines. All the concerts I went to, all the parking lots. I kind of honked. This person honked. A few weeks later, you know, when the accelerator stuck, I pull into this little electric store kind of shop. They deal with carburetors, electrical problems on the cars. I was also having that. It's too long of a story to tell you. And I'm standing there. I got my leather coat on, my long hair. You know, I'm thinking I'm cool. And this yellow Roadster pulls up right behind me. Guy gets out. He's having the same problem. We start talking. He's got his leather coat on, his long hair. Next thing I know, I'm thinking to myself, I know this. I've seen this guy. Where have I seen? The Jesus freak. He's the Jesus freak. He's got my car. So I play it cool. You know, I don't say nothing. I know his trip. You know, I know his message, all that. I've heard it. So he talks to me and introduces himself. And said, maybe I'll see you around sometime. I said, yeah, well, maybe. So we end up at the same shop a couple more times. We start having these conversations. And, you know, you kind of like to be one of those people you try to pretend you accept everybody, even though inside you go, shut up, get out of my face. But you never say that. You just pretend like you're really cool and tolerant and all that kind of stuff. So he's talking to me about God one day. And I'm giving him all the answers because I know him. I mean, my mom taught Sunday school. I've been going to church since I was in the womb. Well, he left this one day and he said, well, you know, Mark, maybe we can talk some more sometime. I said, ah, yeah, maybe. So, 4 weeks later, I'm having trouble with my car. I've been working on it all day with my brothers to go on this big date, this young lady. Finally, the car starts, and I'm supposed to pick up a stereo for her. She lived not too far from this town when she was in school. Now she's in Des Moines, and the stereo was getting repaired. So I went to get it. It wasn't ready. I went out to my car to start it. It wouldn't start. I was furious. I'd already cracked the dash from hitting it a couple times, and I knew this time I'm going to put my fist through the roof, and these roofs can't be replaced because nobody carries convertible tops for Datsun 1600 Roadster. So I said, I better get out of this car. I better get out of this car right now. So I slammed the door, and I go walking in this. Closest place was Leon's Pizza Lounge. So I walk in and I sit in the very back and I'm so mad. My life's just starting to unravel. Thinking I better cool off. And I don't want to talk to anybody. And who should walk in but the Jesus freak? And I'm like, you know, there's like two other people in here and there's me. And I put my head down and I'm looking at my table. Oh, don't come up to me, Tim. This is not a good time. He comes up to me. How you doing, Mark? And I thought to myself, I don't know why this happened. I said to myself, I'm going to find out what he's really made of. If he really means all this baloney that he tells me about wanting to hear. I said, well, you know, if you got a minute, sit down. So he sat down. So I start telling him my story. What's been going on? The near accidents. I bring up this girl. She's not even from our town. I start to describe her. He goes, that wouldn't be so-and-so, would it? I said, yeah, that's her. He goes, oh, I know her. You know her? Yeah, I used to have her in one of my Bible studies. That's all I need, is to be messing around with someone else who supposedly knows God. Next thing I know, he's telling me her whole story. God was working in my life. Even though I made this emotional, stupid decision to buy that car, even though I made an emotional, stupid decision to take her home, God was working in my life just like he's been working in yours. And he was working all of these things together. And it was some of my conversations with Tim that began to make me realize, as I would leave and I would drive to Des Moines, thinking the whole time as I'm driving, I think God's trying to get through to me. I think God's trying to get through to me. Well, little did I know that this was going to be this wonderful relationship that he and I would have. We became lifelong friends. Though I'm sorry to say, my friend eventually turned his back on God. He's almost ruined his life since. I never would have imagined he was the best man at my wedding. But he and I had some wonderful times together. And about a year and a half later, I'm serving God with him. We'd go up to the high school. We'd stand out. We'd hand out little comic book tracts. We'd go down to the community center. We'd shoot pool, play foosball, and we'd have a gang of young people around us, and we'd be sharing about Christ. A lot of people knew me. A lot of people knew him from his drug days. About a year and a half later, I end up at this little conference with Tim. He took me to it. I was really excited. My first conference, man, I couldn't wait to hear somebody talk about the Bible. It's kind of raining out, and we'd driven in his roadster. Mine wasn't running too good that night. We get out in our leather coats, kind of slow. I wish I could show you in slow motion, but never mind. And so we go walk under this stand, and I got my Bible. We each put leather covers on our Bibles. Not leather cover Bible covers, but we ripped the old covers off and we glued new ones on. And they were cool. Because we were cool. Now, actually, I didn't think that too much in those days. I just thought I was lucky to be alive and lucky to know God. We get on this popcorn stand and he starts talking to people he knows. And I don't know anybody, and I'm kind of standing there. And next to me is this young woman. And so they got to understand that the addiction, at least at this point in my life, had been broken. And the only interest to me was God, following God, and trying to be friendly to whoever God put me around, especially brothers and sisters in Christ. So I said, well, this your first conference? Yeah, this is my first conference. Yeah, mine too. How long you know the Lord? She starts telling me her story, and I'm standing there, and I didn't drop my jaw, but I'm thinking to myself, I don't believe this. The whole time I was making my decisions for Christ, almost the identical same time, is this young girl from Kansas. How this young girl from Hutchinson, Kansas, ever ended up at Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa, I don't know. And how did I, from Webster City, end up at Twin Lakes at a Bible camp where she was the same night? I do not know. Only God knows. She begins telling me, yeah, you know, Mark, running has been my whole life. It's empty. It's meaningless. My wife has had all the state records at Des Moines Hoover, which is the largest high school in Iowa. She was now running on the national cross-country team. I wouldn't have known that. In those days, the clothing, you wouldn't have known if anybody was athletic. It was white painter pants, baggy jackets, and bib overalls with underwear shirts on underneath of them. That was the style. So we just began to talk. And she said, you know, two biggest decisions I just made in my life, Mark, changed my life. She said, I broke up with my boyfriend who I've had for 4 years, been waiting for him to propose, but I knew God began impressing my heart. He is not who I have for you. He does not want to follow God. And I broke it off, Mark. He's going to Drake, running there, and the reason I'm at Iowa State was to be close to him. It's over. He wants me back. It's over. Second thing it is, I just quit the cross-country team, Mark, because it's taken all my time. I'm running 17 miles a day. I've gotten sick. I'm anemic. It's over. I'm going to follow Christ. I found out sometime later that the only reason she was at that conference, she was sick that weekend. She didn't have any money to come, but someone had slid $50 under her door in cash. And that's how Kathy ended up at that little conference. Well, needless to say, the rest is history. God brought into my life the most wonderful woman I could have ever imagined. The only reason He did it, and the only reason He was able to do it, is because I had yielded to Him. I had left the choice with Him. And it was about my Father's business. Matthew 6:33 says, "Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and everything else will be given to you that you need." And I want you to know, tonight I know that many of you are at the same point in your life. That many of you here tonight have never fully yielded to God. Even some of you maybe are longtime members of the Rock. You've never really said to God in your heart, "You know what, Lord? I'm not just about church. I want to be a Christian. Everything in my life is Yours. I yield it all of my desires, all of my interests, all of my talents, all of my resources, Lord. My mouth, my mind, it's all Yours. For the rest of my life, I give it to You." That's surrender. And until you obey Job 22, you'll never experience Job 22. Now I want to say, I know some of you here have obeyed Job 22 and you're still waiting. Trust me, when God responds in God's time, it will be like what happened with Jacob. Jacob fell in love. He's an Old Testament character. And for 14 years, he waited for the girl that he loved. He had to work for her father, Laban, and Laban tricked him and ended up waiting 14 years to marry Rachel. You know what the Bible says? It says because of his great love for her, it seemed but as a day. Now, I don't know how else to explain this to you except to say that once I met Kathy, once we were engaged, and even the nightmare we went through of our engagement, once we were married, I can honest to God say to you, I loved her so much, it seemed but as a day. It seemed but as a day. And I know others who have waited years, 10, 15, 20. They told me the same thing. You know, Mark, the waiting, I hung in there. It was hard, but I kept faithful to God. And God was faithful to me. And it seems like I've always been married. I want you to bow your heads tonight. And I want to give you the chance. Maybe you don't want to take it now. Maybe you want to do it later. But I want to encourage you. I want to invite you. Bow the knee of your heart to Christ. Yield to God. I could bring up so many young people that are here tonight who are in the process of meeting the one God has for them, or they're now engaged, and they would tell you the same story. I could share some of their stories with you tonight. I don't have permission. Of men and women who are more immoral than I, doing their own thing, and they bowed and yielded their heart and their will to God. They changed their life. He'll do the same for you if you let Him. And if you get your nose in this book and you receive His instruction and you put it into your life, a revolution will begin to take place that as long as you continue to feed it, it will grow and last a lifetime. Let's pray. Father, I want to thank You tonight that You're in the business of changing lives. You're in the business of revolutionizing people's lives. Father, I know for me, I have never regretted the decision I made that night after almost losing my life. That decision to stop rebelling, to stop doing things my own way. And for me personally, Lord, You know, it was especially in the area of women. It was especially in the area of the opposite sex. I was just doing my thing, my way, whenever I wanted. The best decision I ever made, Lord, was to quit following my emotions and my feelings and to start following You and living for the will of God instead of the will of Mark. Thank You, God, for that. I would go through it all over again to see and to experience and to receive what has happened to me in the last 27 years. It hasn't always been easy, You know that, Lord. There are times the pain has been more than I thought I could bear. But but I would never trade it for a moment. And I ask you, God, to reach out tonight and touch young people's lives. Fill them, Lord, tonight with the hope that you gave to me, that you will keep your word.